Welcome, fellow plebs. My name is Sean, and this is
Tribunus Plebis.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for being here. Hatred and bigotry are being legally codified across the nation. Politicians demonizing minorities simply for existing. Those in power literally telling their followers, that's politicians telling their constituents, just to be clear, and it's also talking heads and news dorks speaking to their listeners, telling them to track, to report on, to hate, to judge, and even assault minorities and the marginalized. Shootings all over the country, killers telling us why they did it. They did it because they were told to. They were implored to by people who they listened to, trusted, and followed. A white man kills black people and tells us he did it because he had to. He had to save the country, the white country, from black people, from foreigners, from non-Christians, and especially from any non-whites. He literally told us his reasons. And we know where he heard those reasons, on our cable news airways and from behind political lecterns. But that's just the most recent example of stochastic terror in this country. Now, when I first wrote a blog post about stochastic terrorism, it was due to a spate of terroristic shootings across the country. One in Gilroy, California, the one in El Paso, Texas, and the last in Dayton, Ohio. Then I nearly talked about the subject again right after January 6th, but I decided to go another way with those episodes, and I kind of left it hanging out there, at least in my own mind. But like all bad things, stochastic terror keeps turning up like a bad penny. But anyway, today I'm talking about this again primarily because of what we saw happen recently in Buffalo at the Tops grocery store, you know, amongst many other events, when a monster went on a racist shooting spree and killed 10 innocent people. But it is informed from tip to tail by the behavior of our government, our media, our fellow citizens, and yes, even our humble podcasters and YouTubers. Specifically, the calls of loser dorks like Tucker Carlson as he railed against minorities and spouted great replacement theory rhetoric, which led directly to these murders. Now, I originally wanted to record this episode right after the Buffalo shooting because it is, you know, most directly linked to what I talked about in that episode that I did on that terrible tragedy, you know, which I think is episode 52 here. And I think it would be worth everybody's time to actually go back and listen to that episode for the, you know, the full context, either before you finish this, I guess, or right after this episode. And I'll put a link in the description to that episode for anyone interested in the connection to, you know, the white supremacist ideology and the rhetoric of these dorks. The reason why this episode didn't come a little closer to the Buffalo shooting, which is what really pushed me to revisit the subject, like I said, was that right after Buffalo, there was Uvalde, which obviously needed discussion, then the Supreme Court, then more Uvalde, then a bit of a mental health break, and, you know, I let it slip a bit. But let's talk about stochastic terror right now. Stochastic terrorism is a term used to describe usually public speech that is likely to inspire a violent or terroristic act. This is done without a direct, explicit link from inciter to actor. Here's the dictionary definition of the term. Stochastic terrorism. Noun. The public demonization of a person or group resulting in the incitement of a violent act which is statistically probable but whose specifics cannot be predicted. Okay, so the word stochastic here means that while the act is random and unpredictable, it is statistically likely to occur. A great historical example of this sort of rhetoric is contained in the story of how Thomas Becket, the Archbishop of Canterbury, came to be murdered. Becket had excommunicated several bishops who were supportive of King Henry II, and on Christmas Day of 1170, Henry is quoted as saying something along the lines of, and I do want to add here that, while the general gist here is agreed upon, the precise words aren't, but he said something like, quote, "What miserable drones and traitors have I nurtured and promoted in my household, who let their lord be treated with such shameful contempt by a low-born clerk," end quote. Over time in tellings, this has been shortened to something like, "Will nobody rid me of this turbulent priest?" And regardless of the exact phrase, Henry basically said, "Am I surrounded by cowards? Will nobody get rid of this priest so I can do what I want to do?" And hearing that, four knights who were there to hear the utterance accepted this question as orders from the king, and they rode to Canterbury to arrest Becket. When Becket resisted, they murdered him. Now, King Henry II never actually ordered anybody to harm Becket, right? He didn't even suggest that somebody should. But as King of England, his words carried so much weight that at least a small percentage of his subordinates heard within his question an express wish that they actually deal with Becket and rid the king of this thorn in his side. That is stochastic. The king didn't necessarily know who would deal with the archbishop, or even how they would, but he knew that somebody would do something, and he knew that he didn't have to actually and explicitly order them to do it. He knew his words carried weight, and that if he talked to enough people, that somebody would understand, someone would take the hint, and that somebody would, eventually, act. Today, this story is used to show how a powerful leader's mere wishes and words can be taken as orders by their subordinates. And hello there, everybody. As most of you probably know, this podcast takes a lot of time and effort to put together and, to get out there for you good folks to listen to. And you, our listeners, can help us by liking and subscribing on YouTube. So please take a second to click those little buttons. It helps a ton. And if you are feeling just a little bit more generous and you enjoy what we do here at Tribunus Plebis Media, you can help us earn just a little bit of money for the large amount of labor that we put into this thing by signing up on our Buy Me a Coffee page, where you can make a one-time donation or sign up for a recurring monthly subscription. We do all of this for free, and we will never run ads in our works. But any contributions really do help keep the show going and improving. The page address is buymeacoffee.com/tribunusplebis. And of course, all links will be in the show notes and descriptions wherever you are listening or watching. Thank you. And now, back to the episode. While these sorts of statements are not explicitly orders, they do carry tremendous weight because of who the speaker is, how large their audience is, how much authority they hold, and what those who, surround the speaker expect the leader to truly want. This lack of explicitness allows the speaker to shroud themselves in a veneer of plausible deniability, something which we see happen constantly right now in this country. For an easier, more modern example, let's just say that an extremely popular cable news host was spending an inordinate amount of time on their show, which just happens to be the single most viewed cable news show in the country, and he's repeatedly expressing his distaste for a certain subset of human beings. Let's go a little further and say that this group of human beings consists mainly of immigrants. And let's further posit that this group of immigrants has cultural differences, and let's add in that they have darker colored skin than the host. and also a much different culture compared to that of the host, as well as the vast majority of his audience. And let's just say that this group is further expanded to include anyone who doesn't like the politics of the host to further sharpen the image. Now imagine that this entirely fictional and made-up television host were to go on TV every night, Monday through Friday, week after week, on the most popular news network in the country, and use terms to describe these brown-skinned immigrants and citizens as invaders. And maybe he goes even further and describes these invaders as filthy and diseased. He insists that they are criminals and rapists and thieves. He uses terms like thug and gangbanger and vermin and violent to describe people with brown skin and maybe a different culture. Let's further say that this entirely fictional cable news host of the most popular cable news show in the land were to then opine that this group of people were coming to this country to destroy it. That they were coming here to overthrow our democracy. And then after all of that, after all of the othering, the demonization, and the accusations, and the insinuations, and the mongering of fear to his audience, he did one more thing. He asks his audience, the millions who watch every day, day after day, and the millions more who watch clips on YouTube or ingest this content secondhand through websites like the Daily Wire or social media, and he asks them a question. He asks them something like this. He says, when will anyone do something to stop this? Or maybe he asserts it this way. He says, this country is being sucked dry by these minorities on welfare, and at the same time, it is under attack by these brown-skinned foreigners. We are under siege. Somebody needs to stop this. Well, it's only a matter of time that somebody actually does something, isn't it? Eventually, when somebody repeatedly sends this sort of insinuation and message to millions of people, at least one of those millions will respond. In fact, we saw one of these audience members respond in Buffalo. That person drove several hours to get to a predominantly black neighborhood, and then they walked into a grocery store with the intent to kill people with brown skin. This event is the very definition of stochastic, and it's an ingenious way for the perpetrators of this sort of hatred and violence to insulate themselves, at least legally, from the inevitable results of their rhetoric. Our entirely fictional, wink wink, uber-popular talk show host who inspired the Buffalo Killer with his stochastically inflammatory rhetoric never knew that the killer existed. He just shouted hatred and a challenge to millions of his listeners to do something and knew that eventually somebody would act. Then he used the stochastic nature of the attack to deny responsibility like the absolute coward that he is. The hypothetical newscaster is definitely Tucker Carlson, by the way, just to be clear. Donald Trump inspired his own brand of stochastic terror when he, you know what? I just remembered a second thing. So let's talk about two parts here. When he talked about Mexicans and immigrants at our southern border and demonized the lot of them, his words very, very quickly turned about half or more of this country into people who were openly cheering as families were torn apart at the border and babies were locked in cages that amounted to little more than dog shelter kennels while their parents were locked up somewhere else. They cheered as parents were deported and their children were left behind, some to never be returned to their parents. Seriously, many children were actually lost. Many more were put into foster care with white families rather than be returned to their parents in, you know, Guatemala or Colombia or Mexico or wherever, or even on the border. Others, the government just fucked up the paperwork on. Whether maliciously or not, these children may never connect with their parents again, here or in the countries that they came from. And our country cheered for this. They cheered. They rooted for it. One guy said to me directly to my face as we ate sandwiches at a picnic table, he said that he hoped all these foreigners died in the desert or drowned in the Rio Grande. He was rooting for it. And our current president hasn't done shit to fully alter this state of reality, and nobody who was demonizing Trump for it really seems to care anymore. Being a bigoted, racist, hateful, pitifully fear-mongering piece of shit suddenly got okay for the other half of the country because he's a Democrat. And the other half, who was cheering this shit before, is now angry because it's not mean enough and cruel enough for them since the new guy's a Democrat. So there's that. A supposed man, like Trump, was able to broadcast his hate to millions of listeners and eventually inspired deaths like the El Paso Walmart shooting, where the killer went looking for Mexicans and other Hispanic people to murder because of the great replacement theory he heard from people like Trump and white nationalist mouthpieces like Tucker Carlson. I mean, unnamed, random, maybe made up cable news personality stand-in with no name. Allegedly. Then, during the COVID pandemic, Trump turned away, you know, from Mexicans and Central Americans and turned his hatred on another group of people, Asians, and specifically Chinese people. When he demonized Chinese people to his millions of followers, many of them understood the call, and they actually physically attacked random Asian people, especially Asian women. People in my online community saw actual racism and violence because of this, inspired by this. My wife, who was Asian, even tended to wear large sunglasses to hide her eyes from possible racists when she was in public. When a president with, you know, perhaps the biggest and most blindly dedicated following in the history of this country tells tens of millions of avid followers that the Chinese people did this to us, and that they are trying to kill the country with COVID, and wonders aloud who will do something to stop this, he had his King Henry moment. And instead of four knights responding, thousands and tens of thousands of racists heeded his call and tried to do something about those meddlesome Asians. And we can't forget about January 6th either, when this potato-brained ghoul incited a mass of potato-brained dorks into rioting and attacking the Capitol building with intent to harm lawmakers, everything from, you know, rapes to lynchings, and in service of a wannabe fascistic regime. Which was, you know, really just the culmination of months of him stochastically whipping his chud dork followers into a foaming-at-the-mouth fervor. This is the power of language when used this way to so many listeners. Racism just becomes okay. Physically attacking people becomes, you know, not just okay, but it becomes righteous. It becomes heroic. None of those people believed that they were wrong. They all got their orders from up top as far as they were concerned. The president said that, you know, these Chinese people are the reason why Americans are dying, why we can't go to bars right now. So they hurt them because they were told to. Carlson said that immigrants are destroying the country and white birth rates are down and that whites are being replaced and that it's an evil plan to oppress white people. Who will stop this? So some moron cornbread dork out there decided that he'd obey his hero's directive and kill some black people. And I don't want to go any further here without talking about how often these messages are sent out into the world. Someone like Sean Hannity or Carlson or Trump says something a single time, perhaps nothing will happen. In fact, it's incredibly unlikely that something will happen. But when they repeat it hundreds of times, even thousands of times, to various and varied huge audiences, and when they encourage the listeners to not just hear the message, but to repeat it, to share tweets, share articles, share videos, talk to their friends, coworkers, and families, and so on, the message gets amplified both in frequency and in volume. This is the nature of stochastic terror. And the key phrase here to remember when we think about not just the repetition of the original message by the speaker, but also the amplification that they get on social media, mass media, and interpersonal discussions is this: repetition reinforces rhetoric. Tell the lie often enough, loudly enough, and assertively enough, and someone will hear it and believe it. And these people know that some portion of their audience will take action. This isn't a surprise. They just hide behind the stochastic nature of the event to avoid blame and legal issues once the inevitable happens. That's it. They definitely know. We see it in Texas, where the recent anti-trans law that essentially criminalizes minors receiving any trans health care drove at least one teen trans child to try to take their own life. The people who made this law, they knew this would happen. They just didn't care. They do not care. We see it recently in a small village in Oklahoma where some subset of the locals harassed an openly gay mayor and made him feel so unsafe that he had to quit his job to protect himself. And the letter he wrote shows where he felt this virulent hatred stem from. From thehill.com, quote, "Adam Graham, the first openly gay mayor of the village, a town just outside Oklahoma City, has resigned, writing in a resignation letter that he no longer feels safe enough to serve. In the last month, I have been followed home from meetings, threatened while walking my dog, harassed at Starbucks, and have had my tire slashed," Graham wrote Monday in a letter to Bruce Stone, the city manager. He said certain sects of the village's population had recently become emboldened to pursue threats and attacks against him bordering on violence. "Unfortunately, these malicious, bad faith attacks are escalating, and I no longer feel safe in my capacity to serve as mayor," Graham wrote. "It is with a heavy heart that I tender my resignation, effective immediately." End quote. They knew that stuff like this would be the result of these laws and these words and this rhetoric. They absolutely know, and they absolutely do not care. And one thing I want to add in here, well, another concept, I guess, is the idea of parasocial relationships. It's actually, pretty important to understand, I think. A parasocial relationship is basically the way the audience feels about who they are listening to. They view the news person as a straight-shooting uncle or bar buddy or something. Listeners go through thousands of episodes of some podcast, like Joe Rogan's, for example, and they begin to view the host as something other than just a famous guy that they listen to. They start to talk about Joe Rogan like he's an old friend because they know so much about him. They even will walk up to a person like this at an airport or on the street and just, talk and interact and try to hang out with them like they're old friends. I certainly have fallen into a little bit of this trap with this particular host. Like, "Hey, you listen to the Joe today?" I'd ask. That Joe is so funny. Gonna go listen to Joe. Remember when Joe was telling us about that time he did that funny thing? And the host shares so much of their life with us that we think we actually know them. Like that we really know them. But this info dumping, it only works one way, and the host shares only what they choose to. The host wouldn't know us from Adam, and no, they don't actually want to talk to you at the airport. To the host, the listeners are strangers who they don't actually care about beyond the fact that you listen and get them ad revenue. We, the fans, see this quote-unquote relationship entirely differently. The host becomes a parasocial buddy, whether the host wants it or not. And by the way, I'm not even trying to diss Rogan right now. This part's not really his fault. I blame him and dislike him and stopped listening to his show a long time ago for other reasons. The fault here is the audience and our, in our brains, in this parasocial relationship stuff. And, Rogan is just an easy example that most of us would know and grok onto. Basically, we view the hosts of shows like this as friends, and we listen and we absorb the messages that they present all the more greedily. Essentially, we take our familiarity with these personalities and our brain tricks us into thinking that it works both ways. This allows us to consume the content more readily, you know, and then primes us to instinctively support, agree with, and act in a way that would make our parasocial buddies happy. Our brains make us think that we will get approval from the podcast host for taking on their views, and we seek this out subconsciously. And if you get cult vibes thinking about parasocial relationships and how they work and how hosts could manipulate their audiences with these forces, then you're pretty much on the right track. They share a lot of similarities, actually. And the hosts do sometimes manipulate us intentionally. Think politicians and people like Tucker Carlson or Judge Jeanine or whoever is hosting at CNN. And all of this makes stochastic responses ever more likely. Now, you know, nationally followed networks and news people and political leaders aren't the only lodestars of this issue. However, the racial, fear, and accusation-charged speech of these leaders has led to a disastrous normalization of this sort of speech rhetoric and ideology. Every time a president or senator or media figure utters a racist, fear-mongering attack and, you know, nobody steps up and shuts them down, the Overton window shifts just a little bit more. And as much as I hate to use, you know, Overton window here, I guess I am, because I can't think of a better term, but it shifts, it slides. The acceptable language becomes just a little bit more loaded and gross. And once this happens, the next public figure thinks it's okay to be even more racist, even more fear-mongering. And that, too, is accepted by his audience, and the Overton window shifts just a little bit more. And as that window shifts, as the rhetoric shifts, racism becomes just a little bit more accepted. It becomes just a little bit more palatable, not just to the public speakers, but to the broader, quote-unquote, polite society out there. Big air quotes there. Racism begins to come out at the dinner table as well, or in restaurants or street corners. Fear-mongering and incendiary, violence-inspiring speech becomes an everyday thing. Then the guns come out, and violence happens, and they tell us why they did it, and we don't believe them. And the people who stochastically urge them to do it dismiss them as a lone wolf. They claim that there was no way to predict this, and they are saying that right now, literally right this moment, somebody is saying that. They willfully ignore the killer's own words and instead go into self-preservation mode. These stochastic terrorists are as complicit as they are human garbage. Do not buy their mealy-mouthed bullshit excuses. They are absolutely complicit. This stochastic terror issue goes much further than such well-known national figures like politicians and television hosts. It even goes into YouTubers and Twitter users and even bloggers or Substack people. And yes, even podcasters, even me. I actually try to be very cognizant of what I say, even with my audience of nearly multiple dozens. I really think about this from, you know, the time I'm taking notes to recording, and even as I'm editing. I've clipped entire minutes from episodes because after listening, I decided that an ill-motivated goober out there might hear my words and take them to mean violence. Now, I'm not perfect. I'm sure someone could listen to all 50-something episodes I've put out and point to at least a few sentences that could be misconstrued, but I do my best. I actually try to do good, to do right. These people like Tucker Carlson or Trump, they don't try to do right. They directly and knowingly inspire stochastic terror in their audiences. They intend it. They mean it. And they use the cover of the very nature of stochasticism, if that's even a word, to insulate themselves from direct blame. We as a country, as an audience, whether we like to think of ourselves that way or not, absolutely must understand this concept and battle against it and call the stuff out when we see it and hear it. Independent commentators such as myself need to step up and point it out and talk about it. It can't be loaded language anymore or dog whistles. It has to be said that it's racist language and it's meant to incite violence instead. Stochastic terrorism is one of the hardest things to deal with just because of its very nature. The act can be predicted. We know someone will hurt someone else due to these words. We just can't predict who will do it or when. But we must try to fight it nonetheless. And the only way I can see to do this is to castigate those who spew the hatred, the stochastic terrorists who call for violence. And we need to do it as they happen so that we can help bring light to the dark. And that, my friends, is the end of the episode. I hope you liked it. I think it's an interesting subject, even as it is dark. As most of you know, it takes a lot of work and effort to make these episodes. So if you can spare a few bucks every month or even make a one-time donation, we have a Buy Me a Coffee page at buymeacoffee.com/tribunusplebbies, where you can sign up for a monthly donation or just make that one-time donation. If you're on YouTube, please subscribe, like, share. And I guess that's it for today. Thank you very much, guys. I love you all.